Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It is Monday, November 12th, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 202. I'm your host, Austin Walker, and joining me today, Rob Zachney.
Hello, hello.
Patrick Klepek.
Go Bears.
I don't have a third thing here because both Natalie and Danielle are out for the day. Escato is here on the Wheels of Steel, but he's not mic'd up, I don't think. How's everybody doing this weekend?
Bears are in first place, and like I think you're significant contenders to win the division. I don't think we're a first-round playoff elimination the way we're playing lately.
No way.
I'm starting to believe. And I don't know. You may have heard me. This is controversial, Austin. But I think Mitchell Trubisky is an elite quarterback. People need to say his name with a little more respect.
If I type in elite quarterback, do you think his name will come up on the internet?
Yeah, it's just defaults on. What does Google default to if you just type in elite quarterback?
Let's see. Joe Montana.
Tom Brady.
Uh-huh.
Drew Brees.
Yeah.
Ben Roethlisberger.
Okay, I'm not like saying that.
I'm going to keep going down this list. Aaron Rodgers.
Sure.
Matt Ryan.
No.
Phillip Rivers.
Okay.
Yeah, underrated.
Yeah, I can give, yeah, underrated. And Alex Smith.
Come on.
I'm looking at right here. I'm taking Mitchell ahead of Phillip Rivers.
Yeah. Those are the images that appear right here.
Sure.
I don't talk about sports because the Eagles lost to the Cowboys yesterday.
They did. Yeah.
And that is the worst feeling I could
have.
They
didn't look good either.
They looked bad.
It wasn't a good loss. It was a bad loss.
It's been a rough year. It's fine. I feel good that it's been a rough year. I couldn't stand it if the Eagles had won a Super Bowl and then come out and been like 8-0, 9-0. Like, it would kill me inside because that's not who the Eagles are. I know who the Eagles are. The Eagles are like up by 20 in the third quarter, lose the game. And then the next week, down by 13 in the third quarter, win the game. And then you even out with like a mixed record. You get in on a wild card. You get further into the playoffs than you think. And then you play a team that's substantially better than you and you lose. That's the Eagles I know and love. And I'm ready to go back to that. That's great. That's great. This is sports. I love this.
It's so weird to me. Watching football this year, because it made me realize the degree to which I've been conditioned to feel almost sick with dread every time a Bears quarterback like dropped back in the pocket.
Oh yeah.
Like it was weird. Like Bears football like has kind of been miserable most of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And
Rex
particularly
Grossman,
on offense.
Right to Jay Cutler.
Right. And so like I was just conditioned to like kind of hate when our offense was on the field. And it's so weird like this year to start to relax and feel confident and get excited when the offense comes out. And I was like, is this what like Packer fans and like New England fans have been feeling for you? Like,
I truly don't even know what it is like. Yeah. I can't even imagine what it's like to be confident in your team in that way. I think like last year's Eagles were really, really strong. And so there was like a degree to which by the end of that season, when I was actually starting to watch again, when I was like, all right, the child in me is desperate to watch this, even though the adult in me hates the NFL for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
I'm going to let myself enjoy this. It took me a while, but eventually I was like, yeah, you know what? Like this, like pre-injury, Wentz was just a joy to watch, and then eventually Foles became a joy to watch, and that like joy overtook it. And it wasn't like, you know, if I'm watching basketball, if I'm seeing like the Golden State Warriors play, it's just fun. Everyone's having a fun time on the Golden State Warriors all the time. I don't think I'll ever have that in football because of a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly because I'm rooting for a team that's not, like you just said, like has such a long history of disappointment, of like every play being a chance for catastrophe, that it's hard to shake that kind of mode of viewership. Speaking of disasters and catastrophes, Rob, you've been playing Vampyre, and I'm not saying that game is bad. I want to be clear. But that game does... It's not. I hear it's good. It kicks off after a catastrophe, right? It's like in the middle of a major epidemic in England.
Yeah. Vampyre opens right as World War One is still going on, but the pandemic, the Spanish influenza, is starting to make itself like internationally known.
Right.
And... But this is kind of the, like, gothic horror fantasy game version of the Spanish influenza. So, like, you know, the game opens in a mass grave. And, like, apparently London is starting to fill up with mass graves. And, like, I'm not sure it got quite as, like, oh, it's just bubonic plague time. We're burning bodies in the street with the Spanish flu. But nevertheless, you open in a mass grave and you're all... You know, you've been left for dead and you're all jacked up and you can't, like, the world's grayed out. And your character's just, like, stumbling around like he just woke up after a bender. And it's like, I'm so hungry. And it's, like, really kind of creepy because, like, and this is where you really fuck up. You see a woman, except she's represented just as, like, a beating red heart and arteries flowing through, like, a human form. And, you eat her. You're a vampire now. And you just snack. And it turns out, oh no, it was your sister. And she was looking for you because, like, where's my brother been? And that's how the game opens up, is, like, not only do you, like, get turned into a vampire, but you're a vampire who's, like, thrown into just this, like, absolute nightmare. Like, your life is destroyed at the outset, but you're also made, like, an accomplice to that destruction.
Right.
And so it leaves you in no doubt, like, can you be one of the good vampires? It makes that a lot more freighted, I think, early on by, like, showing you who your character is, like, back against the wall, most desperate.
Right.
What your character will do, how inhuman your character can be. And then from there, I gotta say, like, this brings to mind a lot of what I loved about the early Witcher games.
Patrick made a face when you said that.
I was looking at your hair.
Oh, yeah, I pulled a feather out of my hair just now. There's a feather.
I
want to
make
it
clear.
Yeah, okay.
It's molting season. It is. at the Walker household. Yeah. No, but it's like, imagine an RPG that doesn't have to be 100 hours long, doesn't have to have, like, 60 hours of side quests. What if it's just, and it doesn't have to have, like, a world whose square mileage is also measured in the hundreds. Like, this is just a really, like, dense RPG set in a series of, like, small, pretty well-realized neighborhoods and has a really manageable cast of characters. And you just go inhabit that world and go try to navigate the dilemmas you find there, which I think are also really gratifyingly... small scale, human scale. Like, there's implications early in the game that there's some overarching, like, end of times plot that maybe you have to be trying to avert. But most of what you're doing is this kind of, you know, the plague is overtaking a neighborhood, and there's rumors of, like, a free clinic there that's sort of operating off the grid, but nobody will talk to you about it because, as far as everyone else is concerned, you're kind of a rich, established doctor. Like, you are not going to... Like, nobody presumes you're going to be on the side of, like, ordinary people.
Sure.
And so there's an entire chapter of the game that's about gray market medical care for people who can't afford or can't get spots in proper hospitals. Are these people, like... They're stealing supplies. They're getting supplies off the black market. They are blackmailing people to finance their operations. But at the same time, they're servicing a community that literally has no one else sort of carrying that burden. That's kind of what this game, that's the zone where this game largely operates. It's, you know, you there on the street dealing with these sorts of issues at the scale.
And you're finding the stories, those little micro stories that they're telling, you're finding these kind of human sized characters all fairly compelling so far. Now you're making a face.
Yeah,
that's a real face.
Patrick, help me out
for me. Like, that's gonna be like, that's so both of you played this game now.
Yeah, I played it when it came Yeah, it came out in the summer. And also, note, it's from Don't Nod, you know, the Life is Strange folks. I think, I don't know this for sure, but my guess is, like, there are multiple teams there, and there's, like, the Life is Strange team. And my guess is this is, like, the team that worked on Remember Me, the under sort of, like, underrated sci-fi memory Capcom game from a number of years back. Because this is way more in that sort of vein, in which there's, you know, a fair amount of combat that is a lot hit or miss, but it's just sort of there. And yeah, I found it sounds like, Rob, you kind of backed into this in the same way that I did, where it was like, it just for a while, like I couldn't really articulate what it was about the game that I found so interesting. Like I am like by nature, like attracted to games that are ambitious, but flawed, and just trying to like dissect, you know, what it's trying to do and what it fails at and what it succeeds at. But like this game is like incredibly charming. Like the writing is like, it's not great, but it's, like, good enough. And I think it also falls into the same category of, like, when we describe games as earnest. Like, I think Vampire is a very earnest game. Like, it is...
But way more competent than Cthulhu.
Yeah. Yes, 100%. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's an interesting thing, right? Is, like, now you have that to compare it to, which we did not earlier this year. It's kind of, like, similar genre, similar space thing. Not but you know what I mean. Yeah, not outer space.
Cthulhu is, like, charming and inept in a lot of ways. I would say Vampire is mostly pretty competent. The writing is not great, but it's, like, decent, and the acting is also serviceable.
And it's all like, in the right direction. It feels like... So, like, whereas with Call of Cthulhu, if they were suddenly given, like, $30 million, like, I'm not sure much changes in that game, right? Like, maybe it's, like, technically more interesting, aesthetically more interesting, but, like, I don't know that it, like, fundamentally changes, like, the failures of, like, the mechanics and some other parts that don't really work in that game. Whereas Vampire feels like it's a game that's bumping up against a ceiling that is, like, largely resource-driven. It's just, like, they're doing a lot with what they have and probably trying to do too much, but in a way that you're, like, rooting for them, and then you're surprised at, like, what they pull off. And also, even though they're being ambitious, like, within their own constraints, like, they're working within their strengths. Like, I do think those, like, community-driven stories that you find, like, when... Like, one of the highlights I think I wrote in my review is, like, and I think this is later from where you're at, Rob, is like, you know, like these interactions you have like with sex workers, and like the conversation trees are just like really interesting and branch in all sorts of fascinating ways that you're like, wow, like this game is just, it's operating on different levels that it definitely doesn't have to given its sort of like, you know, B-movie premise, but like it really digs into that and tries to tell like some really interesting community-driven stories that I just found myself rooting for the game and really excited by some of the stuff that it manages to pull off often despite itself.
And I like the degree to which there's almost like a doctor. You're like literally kind of end up making the rounds at points of this game.
Yeah.
Like, there's, first of all, there's an overarching like meta layer where you have to, every neighborhood has different like health qualities. Like basically neighborhoods can tip over the edge and become completely overwhelmed by the flu or the vampire plague. And I don't know what happens at that point. Probably nothing good. Probably that neighborhood like becomes sort of monster central. But you can sort of prevent that by intervening and making sure people like get proper medication. And so there's that element of the game. But also I just really kind of enjoy the way this game doesn't totally set aside this premise that you are a vampire who was also a physician who is hired by like some member of a secret society that's like aware of vampires, but also you were sort of installed as like a resident medical practitioner at a hospital, and like part of your job is to actually do that. Like it's not just this is a front for your vampiric operations. Like literally there's this weird like homey quality to when you come back into the hospital district and you go back and you start like checking in on your patients, talking to the staff. It's
because the game like layers in the identity that the character has, and it's woven deeply also into like the way the conversation structure like evolves over time, in which like you're unlocking these clues from other conversations that open up new avenues in previous conversations, and like oftentimes that is related due to like medical investigations that you're conducting for various members. You know, there's like interesting bits where you're trying to solve some sort of like medical conundrum, but like you can tell that people aren't giving you the information straight, like they're lying to you. And then like in the environment, like you'll stumble upon these little spots where like as a vampire you can kind of like hide out and like listen in on conversation, and like that gives you, you know, information that leads into the. It's just like a they being a doctor is just not a. It's not a veneer. It's not, it's not like an aesthetic. A, it's like it's right, built right, right. Into the gameplay and the meta layers in a way that makes the role playing part like really really satisfying. And especially when they start pulling at various tensions between the fact that you are in your previous life had been like a rich hoity-toity doctor, and now you're out here working with people of lesser means. And there are times when the game like pulls at that tension pretty successfully, where just like you do get decisions that you get to make, but there are times where the game forces you into situations that are like by nature like what this kind of character would do, because they would look down on the strategies that these kinds of people might take in order to survive or make do.
And something else that I enjoy here is that, so this is a game set in, you know, you call it the very end of, you would say this takes place at the very end of like what we think of as like the aesthetics and look of like Victorian England. Really, we're past that. We're even past like Edwardian England. Nevertheless, like it still has that, you know, fog hanging over the streets, gas lamps everywhere, electricity just starting.
Right,
but like,
right.
Used to these aesthetics being kind of embraced a little bit uncritically, I guess, a little bit. Like that whole steampunk aesthetic problem of, woo, we love the Empire. I say, Chauncey. That kind of stuff. And something else I enjoy in this game is that one of the major threads in this game is that immigrants exist in this world. Like, Europe has been torn to shreds, not just by war, but like years of unrest and revolutions leading to this war. And there's already a massive, underclass of immigrants and laborers who are already living kind of off the grid, who are already being exploited by existing systems in the country. And your character sort of inhabits this border space between what you'd call like institutional power, legitimate institutional power in England at the time, and then also the people who those systems have excluded. And I think it's just cool to see a game playing with this material, but doing so in a way that doesn't shy away from the fact that like a lot of these clashes, a lot of these issues around immigrant communities and how they are treated, they aren't new problems. This stuff recurs, and they've always been there, right? This is always part. Like, it's not like Whitechapel is not just where a bunch of people in Cockney accents are like going around being like, "Oi, Gov, think the Ripper's back,
Jack the Ripper."
Yeah. It's not that.
Which like, is what Call of Cthulhu would have done.
Right. Instead, it's like, no, man, like Whitechapel is, yeah, there's some people like that, but mostly it's like Eastern European refugees who've already lit out because their countries have been like overwhelmed by war. That's like most of who you're going to find there. And that's a cool departure from a lot of the stereotypes I associate with this setting and the genres that tend to employ it.
Have you gotten into any of the, like, one of my favorite parts of the game, at least early on, it's a gameplay mechanic that doesn't really pan out in the second half nearly as much, but like part of the tension in the game is that in order to upgrade your character, you need to feed. And yes, you can
get
a certain amount of blood from like the like random enemies you find, but it's not.
They're like, worth like that, 50-100 points.
It's not going to.
Why are they worth so little blood? What's wrong with them? Why don't they?
We're usually fighting
blood?
Vampires, so it's like.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
I mean, I don't know how much blood is in an I don't know how that actually works.
Well, and also, you're fighting like anti-vampire rent-a-cops. Okay. And like you can only get a little slurp in combat, but like you can't like drain them. You can't fucking go Capri Sun on their asses.
Well, you're usually like slashing them up with your claws anyway. So you're kind of
the blood's already
fucking
getting
them
out there. And also, I bet you once you expose blood to air, it's not as good. You got to get directly from the blood bag into
it's
vampire.
Like wine. Yeah, it's like you want like you don't have to air out.
You
got to
drink from the bottle like wine.
Yeah. But Patrick, you were saying.
Yeah, so like one of the tensions is like, you know, you'll meet different characters, and so like what the game really smartly does, and this is like such an interesting tension early on, is that if you want to the combat, if you play on the normal mode, they've since put in a story mode that sort of like sidesteps a lot of this stuff. If you want to sort of like keep pace with combat, and also have like a variety of options in front of you, you need to find people to eat. And these are not just random people on the street. These are NPCs that you've spent time with, maybe
hours
of time with you. Maybe you've solved something for them. And so what the game smartly does is, like, you know, surface level, it's not clear whether, you know, what you want to do is figure out, well, who's the bad guy? Like, who are the people that we can sacrifice and feel like all right about getting them off the street? Maybe I'm actually doing everyone a favor. And like surface level, that won't always be clear. But if you spend the time to like do the investigations, to like really dig into people's stories, you will often find contradictions that'll make you go, all right, like you're a dick. Like, all right, we're just going to move on with this one. That requires a lot of work. That's not clear up front. I remember my first kill was not one that I felt great about. But eventually it was just like, in order to move forward, I'm going to have to make a choice. So I was curious if you'd gotten to any of those systems so far.
So I've mostly, I'm starting to feel the real pressure. At first I was like, oh, I'll just do tons of quests and grind the XP and I'll be fine. But each time you go to sleep, the day clock advances. And a lot of like checkpoints that are set up or like places that are infested with enemies, they will be much higher level the next time you go through. And so like I thought I was ahead of the power curve,
but you were
not. Then I slept, and now like I've gone to this place. I was like, okay, this neighborhood should be easy now. And I'm like in a fight for my life.
Well, in order to you sleep, the way the sleep mechanic works is that in order, so when you do process upgrades, you have to sleep in order for those upgrades to take hold. So you can't just like keep spinning your wheels like on the same day. It's like if you want that health upgrade, that strength upgrade, and that cool new ability, well, then you need to sleep. And it's like not only do the enemies get stronger in certain areas or certain areas deteriorate, but like certain side quests can go away. Like if you come across like an ambient side quest and you don't take care of that, if you sleep, well, that's just gone when you sleep. There's all these like little things, like tensions the game is constantly pulling at to make you feel uncomfortable, especially early on.
Yeah, so I've been feeling that pressure where like I gotta feed, like I gotta eat. And the problem is I haven't found people I dislike enough. Like there's one dude definitely that's gonna get eaten before this game is over.
There's the priest. I want to remember like out in front of the hospital, there's a guy hanging out by the river.
No, the game like tries to get you just eat that guy, and like I'm like,
are you not going to take the bait?
No. Like, I'm going to learn more about him and see whether he should be.
Okay, eating. All right, sure, fair.
But
fair,
like,
fair.
It's sort of like farm. It's like farm raised. Like I need to know this. Like who is this thing that I'm consuming? Did it have a good life? Hopefully not, because I want to feel good about ending it. But so there's a shitty priest who's like, Spanish influenza is because of your sins. I burned down a tenement because it was full of like foreign sinners. And I'm like, I'm going to eat you. I don't have the mesmerize ability to take him yet.
Unfortunately, Rob, I think that is such a late game mesmerize. I think you're going to have to find,
you move away from an area, you can't return to areas.
No, you can. Yeah. There are, I think four, primary areas, five primary
areas.
But
I'm a long way from being able to like mind control.
You're a very long, like I think he's like a mesmerized level 4 or 5, and it's just like, sorry Rob, it's not going to be that easy. You're not going to be able to eat. The way that like the curve on that works is like the first half of the game is a lot of fun because it is forcing you into like compromise situation, because it's like eventually you need power and you need to upgrade, and so then you start looking at people and say, well, I don't know. Are those investigations things I'm going to solve, like, late game, and then I'm going to be able to wrap around to it? Or do I just need to, like, you know, just compromise with this situation and go? Like, you the second half of the game, you end up getting enough objectively evil people that it's just, like, I didn't have to pick any of the coin flips anymore.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
But early, and I wish the game had pressed me harder on that, because
there's this shitty old lady in the hospital who's like a resident patient and she never fucking leaves. But like, the first thing she said to me is like, oh, why are you asking these questions, doctor? Is it because everyone here is incompetent and nasty? Oh, the nurses are all sluts and whores. And I was like, I need to kill you. Like, first, give me the quest information I need, but then I'm going to eat you, you shitty old bag.
Yeah. And it's fun because like, based on who you like, there are quest lines that are connected to different characters. So it's like if you then make the choice to end that, to feed on that character, well, if you didn't finish out that quest is just gone.
So is it just like quests gone, or are there
quest
situations
gone.
Okay, but are there situations where a different quest? I still like quest gone.
No, quest gone. Quest gone. It's binary. It's binary okay. that way.
Yeah. Are there any quests you solve by eating people? Where like someone is just like, man, my landlord fucking sucks. I hope you can go talk to my landlord and make him suck less. And then you go there and you're the one doing the sucking because you're a vampire. And you go back like, yeah, your landlord problem is dealt with.
There is a shitty landlord. NPC. Yeah. He's the most satisfying kill in the entire game.
But probably not tied to that.
And so also what the game does is that so even if you identify someone up front, so like the shitty landlord is shitty right away. Like you'll know like, oh, let's do this.
Right.
But if you spend more time investigating them, like there is these explicit clues that you're filling out and then the game checkboxes mm-hmm. that. Every time you do that, their blood becomes more valuable. Not for any particular reason. It's just arbitrary bullshit. But it's the game trying to pull it. It's like, yeah.
it's like
want
Whole
you
Foods.
To...
They tell you the story of the food. It's like this cheese is from a farm in like this is Vermont cheddar.
Oh.
It's been aged. Yeah. yeah.
You know the name of the cow.
This is like the secrets. Yeah. So
it
this
just,
is
it
like
it tastes a little better in that way. You know what I mean?
Like right. it might be a placebo effect.
Right, totally, but you know.
Because it's not just a shitty landlord. This is like and like it's not just shitty. Like, he is an abject monster. Like
okay.
by the arc of that becomes just like, oh, like you are. It is hit that fucking right bumper button and just like, oh, it's so good. And but like that's all that's reminded again. Like right now, how much I loved all these little subsystems of the game because it's just like really intelligent about making you care about side characters, making you care about like the A story is not that interesting.
Right.
I mean, it's fine, but like this game. Like really doubles down on the stuff that actually requires less resources, which is like stuff that has more to do with like exploring and voice acting that isn't like lavish set pieces and things well, like that.
And you also know? Like it's solving something that has started to frustrate me a little bit with a lot of immersive sims. I love them, but I think the Arcane immersive sims have fallen down on this where like, there's a lot of like lore and shit seeded into the world, but it's kind of inert. You can't do anything with it. It informs the world, but there are no systems where because you now know this piece of information,
right?
You can change the narrative at all. It's yeah. just, yeah, you basically you found more of the lore Bible for the game, and that's what it is. And that can be enriching. But what's cool about this is it reminds me a little bit of like, I don't know, Deus Ex 1 or something, where, like, the more you do, the more you can do. That, like, yeah. when you find something in the world, that's probably not just some piece of flavor text that's out there. There's probably somebody you can go and, like, talk to about this to change the course of the story or learn a secret. And it makes this tiny world feel much denser and livelier, which I think is kind of a... This feels like something that immersive sims could probably benefit to learn from just in terms of what is like it's fun to go out there in the world and find more out about characters and setting
mm-hmm.
but that stuff gets even more enjoyable and like more enriching if that can also I think be turned back to the main action of the game and connected to that in some way.
Yeah, and there's like really other small like touches that I remember like when I finished this game and I reviewed it, I like kind of told myself, like, remind yourself, this is probably your favorite game you played this year. It probably is. Like, it probably,
like,
and like,
the
this
heart
is not
hearts,
reminding me all the.
Like, you really
yeah,
liked
like
this. You really genuinely
yeah, like,
liked
I
it.
I really liked it. And like, this yeah. conversation is reminding me, like, all the things I liked about it. Like, for example, like, one of the things the game doesn't, it doesn't always tell you when you have a choice in the conversation. Right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, a consequential choice.
I see.
Where it's like,
I see,
most games are up front saying, like, yo, like, here's a timer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like this one's important, or like it colors like a you know a renegade system. You know yeah. where it's like it's color. Like this is gonna like this game has moments that really pissed me off early on, where it's just like I flippantly made a choice, and then the game's just like, eh, like this quest line's dead. Like you fucked it up, and you can't. There are no quick save, quick load.
Oh my
god, it is
god.
Just gone.
This is it. This is
just
your
like,
life now. Pay attention.
And I think it says like quest failed, which
it
like
does.
I don't.
I remember
like,
you saying this.
Because I didn't like the phrasing on that because I actually didn't do anything wrong. It's just that there was what the game should have done was like there probably should be more branching to it.
Yeah.
There was just a better way to massage what it was trying to say, which is like, hey, we want you to like take seriously all the engagements you're having with characters, and the notion of making a choice seem like it's a choice, like this is the one to care about. actually ends up undercutting the role playing you're doing otherwise. Right. And so it just kept me on my heels for like every conversation going forward. It's like, all right, I cannot be flippant about this because this could kill off where I'm going. So I think I had like two or three quests that just like just straight up died on me because of like.
Were there quests where you're like, you know what, fuck it. This answer I'm about to give might end this quest because it's not what this person wants to hear.
Yes.
But fuck off. This is how I'm playing this. And if it ends the quest,
yeah,
it's a quest.
There are definitely moments where like you can feel like this feels like this is where the game wants me to go.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's not how I feel. And so, yeah, sometimes there were ones where it just sort of ends. And like, that's where I wish, rather than just quest, like, because when it says quest failed, it doesn't then like give you some flavor text or some like, like it doesn't like sum it up for you like what
there's
happened.
No Arthur Morgan style journal entry where your character has
no
like,
and that's what it needed right was like so even when it just ends and those people will still talk to you right, it's just that like you just cannot proceed in the quest, so like there's like, you know, it sounds like this game sold well, so I'm like super excited to see them. It's coming to Switch early next year, so like there are so many like things like that where it's like, all right, if they got another crack at it, like easy that they would massage that stuff. But it's things like that that were like really smart design decisions that I found frustrating, but then later came to embrace as being like contrarian in a way that I thought was really smart and useful.
Question about that. Didn't they mark the important questions with the little bloody Y symbol, the little flux capacitor?
Some of them do, but some of them don't. I can't, it's been long enough, it's been too long for me to like remember the UI stuff, but like, you're right, there are times where they do mark it, and then there are times when they
don't. Interesting.
Like, cause I think, like, I want to say the way it works, like, the ones you're talking about there, where it's like a, you're picking a path, and then just sometimes, like, there was just one that just outright failed for me for, like, no reason. And I feel like that happened once or twice, so.
Somebody's like, hey, buddy, you a vampire? And Patrick's like, lol, yeah.
Say a vampire.
It's good, man.
It's good. This talk has made me.
Wait, we should do a spoiler cast. Like, this is,
you're ready to go all
scratching
in.
That itch.
You're like, this is
like
your big. This is your big game of the year now, Rob.
I'm excited. I'm fat. I'm just
climbing
man.
The charts. Fat. Like, after I started playing this, I didn't play Red Dead for the rest of the weekend.
Look at that.
Like, I was just like, this is where I live now.
Take that, cowboy.
Just let me draw that sick fucking trench coat my character wears. Let me draw that a little tighter around my waist. Okay.
Walk through the London fog, you know.
Oh yeah, it's great. It's great. It's like it's sort of where I would have loved to see like the Order 1886 go eventually.
Yeah.
If it was like everything about the setting and then not just a cover sheet.
Right, right. Actually like has some unique mechanics and stuff. I have been actually one thing quick, because you brought up Immersive Sims, I just wanted to shout out how excited I am for Skin Deep, the new Blendo game that was announced, and we just never talked about it. Did y'all see this game?
Oh, I didn't see anything.
So you know Blendo Games, who made Three Flights of Loving and who made Quadrilateral Cowboy and a bunch of other great stuff. I'll put a link in the chat here.
There we go.
It is an immersive sim that includes some fucking incredible mechanics, including it feels like Heat Signature turned into an immersive sim, and then also the blend of like
the sneezing.
But yeah, there's an active reload sneezing mechanic. There's a lot of like very goofy fun like hiding by jumping up on the walls and like putting your hands out to hover above, not hover, but to like hold yourself above where guards walk. It is worth putting on your radar because.
This looks incredible.
Yeah, dude, I'm excited about it.
I wanted to like Quadrilateral Cowboy a lot more than I actually did.
So like that game made me convinced that this game could be good, in the sense that most of my favorite Blendo games, most of my favorite games by Brendan Chung are games about story stuff mostly, like Gravity Bone and 30 Flights of Loving. Like, I pretty much love the way that, you know, he tells a story via montage or via like, rapid cuts or you know, through music cues and stuff like that. I like games like Flotilla and Atom Zombie Smasher and some of the other Blendo games stuff, but seeing Quadrilateral Cowboy's puzzle design made me really interested in what he could do with just game design in this very like mechanical design sense. And so like Skin Deep is now high on my list of things to be excited for in 2019. I don't even know if it says 2019 here somewhere, but you know, that's my hope. My hope is 2019. Maybe it'll be later than that.
He works pretty fast.
That's my understanding.
Like Quadrilateral was in development for a while, but it seems like since that game shipped, he's been
hitting stuff.
Because he's been doing other
he's
side
projects.
He's
working on Sub Rosa,
like
which is a multiplayer heist. Not even heist. It's like a multiplayer, like, rival. You have different teams of like organized crime people all dressed in suits, and you're trying to do like a swap. Like one person has the briefcase or the data disk, and the other team has like the money, and you're trying to do a swap and make sure no one betrays anybody. But then people betray each other, and then it's like a big city simulation of like chase scenes. It looks really cool. I've wanted to play Sub Rosa for like 5 years now, and so he's doing some like city proc gen design stuff on that that I'm excited to see. Other stuff I've been excited by lately, I know, Patrick, you've been dipping into this too. We should talk about the Tetris effect, or just Tetris effect, not the Tetris effect.
Yeah, the Tetris effect is a thing.
Yeah, that's the thing where you, when you play a lot of Tetris and you try to go to bed, all you see is blocks falling. You may even dream about it. That's happened to me before from bad jobs. That's happened to me before for good puzzle games and everything in between. Threes did that. It was the last game that really did that for me. Threes just fucking completely took over my brain, and trying to sleep was impossible because all I could think about were like the little tiles sliding around. Weirdly, I don't know that Tetris Effect has given me the Tetris Effect yet. Tetris Effect is the latest game by Enhance, who I guess most Enhance is the name of the studio that Mizuguchi now runs. They released Res Infinite was the name of that release, right? Yes. Which was the VR version of Res that included a new thing called Area X, which for me is probably my favorite thing I've ever done in VR. Tetris Effect is their attempt to make a new Tetris game that is just one good Tetris. It's just a good Tetris game. It's just like a good version of Tetris you can have on a device.
Would you laugh? But there are a lot of bad fucking Tetris games, especially when EA had explicit control of the license. There were just a lot of really, really, like, it was an era in which you were scrounging eBay to go find Tetris DS, which remains Nintendo's Tetris game of the original DS. It remains one of the best Tetris games ever made. But that became even like more true when EA was just like constantly fucking up new versions of that game.
And then also they wanted to bring the sort of stuff that Mizuguchi's team or that the Enhanced team, which is these are people who worked on Res in the past, Luminous, Meteos. What else did that team make, Patrick?
I think that's the big stuff. But in this space, like Luminous is like the last puzzle game that really got under. I mean, partially that was because I imported a PSP and was like, whoa, I'm in college. I don't have a lot of money. This maybe was a mistake. I'm going to play a lot of this.
Totally. Cha-cha.
I love the song Shinin' over and over again.
Shinin's great. Child of Eden was the one I forgot. And then Every Extend.
I never played Child of Eden one day. One day
I'll get to it. And so Tetris Effect is very similar in nature in that it is a game about Tetris. It's a puzzle game, but it's also a game about a kind of synesthetic and aesthetic like connection and movement and feeling. There is a bunch of little side modes that let you play Tetris with some extra rules. There's like a mystery mode where like there's like every 7 lines there's a new weird rule added or a new temporary thing. But I think the real thrust of the game, the thing that definitely drew me in, the thing I spent the most time with, is called the Journey mode which is a series of 27 levels, each of which has its own song, its own kind of musical and visual themes that change as you play. There are 3 difficulties. Each difficulty is different only in the amount, maybe it's not only in, but it's the key thing is how many lines you need to get to succeed and move on to the next.
How much is on easy? I'm playing on normal.
So on easy, it's 30 because I beat it on easy.
It's 36 on normal.
It's not that many, but the way that this works, and the thing to remember is, for people who haven't seen it yet, is that because it's tied to a song, the way the game works is, as you advance in lines, it moves through the song. And so it's like it will be on the intro until you hit 8 lines or something, right?
Right.
And then from 8 until 16 or whatever, it will be on like the main kind of like chorus or whatever. Maybe it'll be like a verse part of the song. And then it'll hit a bridge. And when you hit 16, and those all have different tempos, which are represented by different like drop speeds. And so a single level could start you off really slow and easy and then slowly build until finally it's like really pumping and you're at like a nice speed 7, nice speed 8, somewhere in there. But some songs have moments where you're like, no, we're on speed 12. Like, fucking deal with it. You're going to be on
Austin, I had. So I've been playing on a normal. I've been kind of cruising through it. Like, really enjoying it. Like, it's definitely sweating it sometimes. But, like, didn't really get up against the wall until, I guess the only way to describe the stage was, like, it's kind of like an industrial or, like, in a furnace.
Oh, yeah. I know.
Where it's just, like, every time it's coming out, like, doom, doom.
Right, so every sound also, everything you do makes a unique sound is an important thing.
Yes.
Right, so it's like...
It's tied to the aesthetic of that stage. Like, my favorite one so far is the winter snowy one, where like every, like... it's like very calm and quiet, and like every time the Tetris pieces connect, it sounds like someone's scrunching in the snow, like on it with a boot. It's like so, like I found it like very moving in a weird way.
It is
like I couldn't
that's
explain.
A whole game.
Like, I can't wait.
Scott Benson on Twitter, one of the developers behind Night in the Woods, described it as like a period piece about 1999, in the sense that like it is this. Very humanist, very like optimistic. It believes in us. It believes in the future. It believes, and not in like an Elon Musk believes in the future way. In a deep like new age. We're all people. There is something deep down that ties
it's
us together.
Connected.
It's all connected. Like you can never really leave each other. There are a lot of songs that literally just have vocals that end up being like. We all love each other. You know, we're all connected. There is nothing else but us, like, but in a really positive, good way. And for whatever reason, it doesn't bug me. It doesn't feel naive about the world. Or
cheesy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
like,
totally.
I guess, like, this word we've been using and other things is earnest.
Yes.
Like, this feels very earnest as well. Like, it's not, like, hitting you over the head with, maybe that's because, like, you're so focused on, like, the game. That these just become sort of like aesthetic trappings, and they have like a message or an ideology behind them, but it feels, I don't know, it's not overwhelming. Like it adds just like a really enjoyable rapper. As someone that didn't think they needed to play more Tetris, and probably once they finish the journey mode, will discover they don't need to play any more Tetris. But like I'm really enjoying my time.
I'm like
through the
journey really loving it. I think like aesthetically it's just gorgeous. There's like so many each level has such a distinct feeling, and the collections of them, the ones that they put together, end up creating. So you kind of do like a 3 to 5 like stage run, and those are like almost like little EPs that you're listening to in a sense, where like there is a rise and a fall of action inside of that set of songs, just like there is inside of any given song. I'm also finding it like this is the first time I've gotten any good at all with Tetris. I'm still garbage. Like I've always been garbage at puzzle games. I don't have a brain for it in the same way that I do for like tactics games. Even like it's very hard for me to think about puzzle games the way I think about other types of strategy games. But there is something about the musical connection that makes me think about it a lot like. Or it puts me in a mode of being, it's like dancing in that like I am playing with the game and I'm like just, there are moments when the tempo picks up and it's like, all right, keep up with me. And I'm like, yeah, I'll keep up with you. I'll go wherever you want to go. Let's go. Let's do it. And I
think that's that specific tempo change is the thing that hooks me. Like the aesthetic stuff is nice. The VR stuff is maybe take it or leave it. I think it is cool. I'll finish it.
It's really
with the headset,
cool, but
I think
it's not necessary. If you're like
if you got a big screen with headphones and put it on and play it in the dark, you know, you'll be just fine too. But it is like what I have noticed is what I've enjoyed are the tempo changes. Like when I get in a rhythm and it's then you know you'll see it, you're like 3 or 4 minutes in, and you're like, all right, I kind of got this. Like I'm making my stack, I'm putting my Tetrises, like I'm good. And then all of a sudden, doom, doom, doom. It's like, oh shit, like whoops, like oh I fucked up that piece. Wow, that is a real problem now. And then I'm like trying to work my way down to that. Like the tempo changes have been far and away the mechanic that has gotten me interested in playing because it's gotten me out of my comfort zone. Like I'm not any good either, but I like have my way of playing, and that's just always going to be my way of playing. I'm not going to play any different because I don't play Tetris enough to like.
You're not going
to
learn how to do
understand the strategy layer
or like or whatever.
Right, but the tempo forces you to play fundamentally different because, like for example, like I can do enough of like making a perfect stack, so I'm getting the Tetris on the right or left or wherever it falls when it's a certain pace. But once that like tempo really kicks up to like 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, that's just survival. Yeah. That is just you like
getting
that's
any
the
line
first time that
get.
I'm like I'm spamming like the turn and I'm like just trying to fit it into a spot. I'm trying to get it over to a certain side, or I'm just trying to like make the least worst situation. Or those situations when the tempo spit up was the first time that I was actually functionally using the main new mechanic of which I'm forgetting
the
name of it. The zone. The zone is where like time basically freezes and then you try and clear as many lines as you can and then it moves the stack down really
it
far.
Like, yeah, like, so it's like basically like any when you clear the line, it basically moves that whole line to the bottom. Basically, it's as if you cleared it from the bottom instead of
right. It's like a good way of like cleaning up like a bad set of Tetrises. It's also the only way to like get like scored well, like that you get huge bonuses. So if you want to get anything above a C, like you need to be using this mechanic. And then also crucially, it doesn't count toward your line clears. Don't count towards your line clears. And so it becomes this like this push and pull where you're. It's like I'm often waiting until like the very end of a stage where I've got like you know 34 or 35 clears, and then I'll put that in, like clear out a big spot. And then get a bunch of bonus points and then finish it and then move on.
Yeah.
But what I was finding with like the really up-tempo stuff where I was stressed and all of a sudden my stack was getting out of control was that, okay, this is the strategic time to use it that's unrelated to a high score because I just need to
live,
regain control of the screen.
It feels so good to run back a failing run. It feels so good to repair the tower that you've built into from a terrible mess into something clean and organized and to recover.
Well, hot tip, this game does not pause when you hit like the center button to go to like the UI. So I this morning I was playing and I had my coffee and I got through like two of four stages in an area and I was like, all right, I'm gonna take a sip of my coffee, took the headset off, took a sip of the coffee, put the headset back on. Hit the UI button, and I just have, like, this fucking nightmare stack because the pieces just started falling on one another.
So
and I was like, I'm not giving up on you. I'm pulling this one back from the brink.
There was a point last night, speaking of, like tips, Casey Malone, friend of the site, was like, Tetris Effect is super hard. And I said, I have a piece of advice that's either going to make me sound like an idiot or an asshole, which is that I get so much better at this game when I look at what the next piece is. And I know that that's like fundamental Tetris 101 shit. I know that. But I've always assumed it wasn't for me in a sense. Like, I will do it at a low speed historically. Like, oh yeah, the next one is a block. I could slide into there. But what I never did was actually make that part of my moment-to-moment Tetris practice at higher speeds. Mostly because I didn't play it at high speeds, right?
Well, just training your eye to just
quickly
look
glance
up very
and
briefly.
Not to think about it.
You don't have to process
exactly
it. You don't have to think
that's
about
exactly
what am I going to do. It's just knowing like, oh, this is the, you know, the three, you know, three blocks and then one in the middle. It's like I can slot that in a lot of weird places. I'm gonna make sure I'm gonna get that down on the right hand side.
I'm gonna make sure I'm not gonna cover up inside, but you don't even I don't even think those full thoughts. Like they're not even like there's no language happening. It is this pre-linguistic style of thought that this game has opened up to me. I'm thinking in whole new ways. Rob is looking very skeptical of me right now.
Well, he started out being upset at
Rob's
you.
Also muted.
Being
Rob's
like,
also
oh,
muted,
look at the next
I think,
piece
right now.
Sorry, I had my speakers up to listen to this music.
Yeah.
I'm watching a gameplay video in the other window, and I'm not looking skeptical. I'm kind of – I was skeptical when y'all were talking.
Okay.
And I was like, it's fucking Tetris, guys.
Yeah.
Like, it's Tetris.
I know.
It is.
I know.
And then I started watching this video.
It's good.
And I was like, this is one of the most beautiful things I've ever beheld.
You should play this game.
Like, I was like, wait, so it's like – it's Tetris, but also it's got a weird, like, audio-visual thematic tie between the way they're presenting the game of Tetris and then the audio associated with
it. Right, it's a
like
dynamic
really sparse,
score.
Like,
it's not just, it's not just it's playing good music and the sounds are nice. Like, it is, like, quantized music played based on when you spin your pieces, when you make lines, when they hit the floor. Like, it's great. It's so good.
Like, I'm staring at one that, like, it opened on something that sounded very, like, very much like churches, almost.
Yeah,
Not like church music, but churches.
Yeah, the band.
The electronic. Yeah. And then it switched to one that was, like, all, like, wireframe, Atari 2600 type graphics, and like the score also shifted to be a little bit more of that, like a bit more, I guess, what you'd call like early synth type music, and it all sounds fucking amazing.
It's all good. And it's 27 good tracks.
I am this close to just like signing off and being like, sorry y'all, I'm just gonna crank the speakers and play Tetris Effect.
It's really good
until nightfall.
This looks
amazing.
I think one of the things that's popped up is like in the conversation is its price. It's $40. It's on PS4 right now. I don't think it's anywhere else yet, right?
That seems fair.
I mean, if it's like Rez
6 months. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I would love
music
to have
this good. Don't come cheap.
Music this good. Don't come cheap. And also, like, part of me is like, so one, $40 is a lot of money for a lot of people. There are plenty of times in my life where I would not have had $40 for Tetris. Like, I get there is something. I get the efficacy of the phrase. You want me to spend $40 for Tetris? Like, I get it. I get it. I do get it. I can play Tetris right now on my phone for free. Probably. Probably. I don't know for sure, but probably.
Or in a browser window that someone has
but
made
definitely,
in China.
But Tetris.
Yes.
Tetris, for me, lost its magic years ago. Like, I don't need to play... I do not need to go back and play Tetris. Great, great game.
Right.
It's wonderful. It's addicting in the best way. It's sort of an ideal little, like, puzzle game.
But it's a known. You know Tetris is a good-ass game.
Right. I don't need... Like, I don't... The last time I went back to Tetris, I was like, yeah, this... I knew what I felt about this 20 years ago.
Right.
I'm done. This has me being like, oh... It could be more.
Right. It could be more. So that's one thing. It's like, I think it's worth... It's just a good game, first and foremost. And I think we should always resist the urge to boil down game conversations to, like, this is only worth $7 because on Steam, blah, 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 which is, like, what has happened to so much of the kind of discourse around game prices. Two is, like, we've had a lot of conversations lately about the cost of labor and making sure people are, like, paid fairly and making sure that people don't have to, like, crunch in order to make a product that's profitable. And I don't know. I can't speak to what the work conditions were like at Enhance making Tetris Effect. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to – I'm not going to do the thing where I'm like, and they treated their workers fairly, and then tomorrow Kotaku publishes a story. Jason Shark.
To make the Tetris Effect, they sealed the access to the boiler room and made DJs compose music 24/7.
Mizuguchi took over took over an entire
what conservatory. Does it sound like when I spin this to the right? Please let me go when I spin it to the right.
Exactly. So I can't do
that.
I mean,
like, video game prices are really out of
whack.
Way
out of whack.
Right? Like, sales culture for as good, like, as, you know, whatever, pro, like, it allows people to buy and experience more games. There are all sorts of tangible benefits to, like, the fact that games have gotten cheaper, or they're, like, there's dynamic pricing, which has led to, like, even developers making more money because, like, being smart about, you know, your pricing makes sense. But it also has led to a very shitty expectation that, well, it's a race to the bottom. I'll wait for the sale. And those are, you know, there are reasonable reasons to take that approach. But I don't think we should hesitate to then. It's one thing to say, does this sound like an expensive version of Tetris? Because it is. $40 sounds like an expensive version of Tetris. But that doesn't. The knee-jerk shouldn't be, well, that means it's not worth
it. Right. I don't even want to... It's so hard because, like, I want to have this conversation because I think the stuff we've been saying is important. But it's... I don't even want to have to frame the conversation in, is it worth $40 to you? Like, I want you as a person to be able to make that decision because you're an adult or you're a teen.
Right.
Whatever you have 40... If you have $40 and you're like, do I want to spend on the Tetris Effect? That's a perfectly good thing to think through your head. I think of that stuff all the time, you know? Like, that's definitely an important part. I don't want you just going out and buying things because I say they're good. But... I want to reserve the right to be like, this is substantial. This is good. This is, like, in a year that has been as shitty as this one has been, as a year that has felt where there are days when you earnestly feel the difference between nihilism and cynicism and can't have to decide which one you want to be today, and everything else is out the window, or there's no even place for hope or optimism some days, a game like this that communicates such a deep and positive vibe for such a substantial amount of time, for such, like, with such clarity and such, like, emotional power, I wanted to just be like, hey, this thing fucking kicks ass. You should play it. When you play it, maybe it's now, maybe it's in 6 months, maybe it's in 2 years. I don't know, but find the time for it because it's really good. Rob, sorry, you had a thing to say.
No, I was just going to say that, like, that whole discussion, I've never been comfortable with it because there's a sort of built-in presumption. Like, literally, I will never know what $40 is to you.
Right.
Like, literally, there have been times in my life where, like, literally, I'm, like, 4 days late on rent, and there's probably 105 left in the checking account, and we need food, but also there's a check out there, and I need to, like, is that going to hit up? There have been, like, I never know what your circumstances are. There have been times where, like, $40, fuck yeah, I'll spend $40 on Tetris. I'll spend $40 on regular Tetris.
Fuck
it. Doesn't even need to be new. Fuck it. you know what? This round's on me. Right. Yeah, by all means, let's get those frou-frou-y cocktails. Yeah, having a good time. And then there's weeks where that changes. And so I think the conversation is, I think, bound to be frustrating because ultimately, I think the best we can do is discuss whether or not something is worth your attention.
Right.
And sort of indicate what we might find there to be worth your attention or worth considering. But I've never been able to sort of, I've never been able to boil a game down to, like, what's it worth to you? Because I know what it's worth to me in that moment. And that changes.
Yeah, I think that's fair. We should take a break, and when we come back, we'll talk about some more games we've been playing. Sound good? All right. BRB.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, we are back. I briefly want to hit Man. I briefly want to hit Man because I've been playing Hitman 2, more of it. I'd done a preview that we talked about last week. That game has since come out, and I've played it all. Well, not all, because there will be more coming out. There will be escalation missions and elusive targets and all that, and I certainly have not completely cleared all of the stages. There's a lot of additional ways I could be killing my targets and a lot of little side stories and stuff in these levels that I haven't seen yet. But I played through all the levels. I played through a couple of them a couple of times. And again, disclosure, very close friends with a writer on the team. It's really fantastic. It's such a good sequel to a game that I think was already really, really fantastic. It is such a different take on the stealth action game, it's really just a stealth game. Like, there's action technically. You know, you can theoretically get into gunfights in this game, but you're not winning by getting into cover shooter, going into a cover shooter mode, right? You can take cover and you can shoot, but, like, that isn't how you get anything done. Playing through it again has reminded me of what a good comedy game it is, because you can play it on a good run. You're the wind. You know what I mean? You blow through people's lives, and some of them don't. They fall down and they don't stand back up, right? Like, you are just like, what happened? I don't know. Oh no, what happened? What happened to Rick? And, like, that's it. Rick is dead. No one knows why, and that's great. Most of the time, though, you are like a shitty spitting hurricane where you're just like making a mess, and everyone's like, this fucking, what are you doing? Stop it. And you're just, it's so funny to have a perfectly, you know, a plan that you execute perfectly through steps 1 through 9, and then you get to step 10 and it all falls apart. There was a sequence where so there's a bunch of levels, and they're all pretty interesting. One of them, the one that I actually talked some shit about last week, is Colombia, in which you are, like, going after a cocaine cartel, and there's a lot in that level that doesn't sit great with me. There's a shaman in that level that you can take the place of and bless some ground. There's, like, a lot of stuff that it just feels a little off and very much, like, very deeply stereotypical stuff between the cocaine cartel and the, like, sleepy band that is all hung over and spread across the town. Like, they're dealing in some stuff that doesn't work. That specifically does work, but it works for people and for players for whom those stereotypes are not speed bumps, but are actually highways. So that stuff sucks. The thing that didn't suck was, one of the ways I got to a target was by knocking out this hippie who had shown up in Hitman 2016 at a different level, and he was there transporting some sort of special, like, cocaine from outside of this cartel to like get it you know, analyzed. Like, oh, maybe they have something special in this cocaine. And so you knock out that
you got to know its name.
You got to yeah, exactly. And so you put it. You have like a little fake like a toy bus basically that has the cocaine in it. And you walk up to the guards, and the guards like, oh, we've been expecting you. And they show you inside through like the weird cave system to the head cocaine producer, basically, dude. He's like a cocaine scientist. He is literally developing a thing called super cocaine, which is both very goofy in a funny way and also a little bit too Wildlands in its understanding of the cocaine industry and what the fuck is happening in South America and in cocaine cartels or in drug cartels. In any case, you show him the thing and he's like, I'm gonna sniff it. I'm gonna do the cocaine because I have to see if it's good. But of course, you're a hitman, which means you've poisoned the cocaine. So he does the cocaine and then he dies. And I'm like, yes, got him. And then everyone's like, did you kill him? Like, you gave him this cocaine. And so I was like standing around and everyone's like, you stay right there. And I'm like, no, I gotta go. And I just like start speed walking away. And they're like, hey, stop. And that's like just a very funny sequence that I hadn't thought through the whole thing. There's another one where basically you end up, I'm not gonna spoil which one it is, but there's definitely one in which you think you're gonna like, all right, I'm gonna fucking get this guy. And this is in a different level. This is in Mumbai, which someone wrote me and said they may be using the wrong accents in Mumbai. Again, like, this is one of the reasons why it's important to do your research if you're doing a kind of a world-hopping, jet-setting game around the world. They may be using an accent from the wrong part of India in this level.
India's big.
India's big, and you cannot just, like, default in that way. There's a side conversation here to be had about resourcing. But, in that level, there's a character who you can like, I'm going to fucking corner this guy. And you, like, sneak in with a certain disguise. And you end up – he ends up at the end. He's like, I got to talk to you privately. And he takes you to a private place, except he comes with an armed guard. And he's just like, all right, listen. I'm going to tell you how it's going to be. And he just, like chews you out for 5 minutes about how he's the big dog in town. And, like, yeah, you could just pull out a gun and waste him and his bodyguard at that point. But it took me by such surprise because normally the targets are really foolish and they will lead you to the side to talk to you about something and be completely alone. But he had me. I was the one he was threatening to kill. And so I was like, all right. I just let him walk away. And I was like, fuck, I got to figure out a different way to kill him, I guess, because I was just so shook. It's been a really good time.
I just didn't know what to say.
Totally. I didn't know what to say or do. There's a lot of new stuff here that's really cool. There's a lot of, like, there's new stuff for blending into the crowds. There's new stuff for blending into, like, plant life and vegetation. There is stuff around just the UI is so much cleaner. One of the problems with Hitman 2016 was that it didn't necessarily communicate to you, unless you did the tutorial very carefully and very slowly and took it all in and made sure to read all the tooltips. There would be some things that were a little vague around, like, one of them was trespassing. When you went into a place you weren't supposed to be in before, it would do like a little outline around your mini map, your radar, basically, and it would be like, oh, this means you're trespassing. They got rid of that, and instead there's now a big yellow bar with black text that says trespassing down in the bottom left. It's like, look, motherfucker, don't be here. You're going to get in trouble. Or know that you're going to get in trouble if this happens. Or versus, like, same thing, if it's really bad, if it's like combat or hunted, that's in red, or witness alive, you know, or something like that. That will be in red. So those sorts of things are a lot better. There is the mirrors all work now, including in, so if you own Hitman, the 2016 Hitman already, I think this is everywhere. It's definitely on
PC.
They retcon reflections to it. Well, they bring you all those levels into Hitman 2 if you already own Hitman 1. So you just get those levels. And they added the reflections. They added the crowd hiding stuff all into Hitman 1's levels.
Wow, that's really
which
cool.
Which is really fucking cool because there are levels where I replayed Paris, which is one of my favorite levels from the first game, which is this big fashion show in like a Parisian palace, basically. And it was... I'm so used to, like, okay, one of the things you can do is you can turn on a water faucet to gain someone's attention outside, like, it will start flooding, and so, like, a guard will go in to turn off the faucet, and traditionally, I would just be hiding in, like, a closet in that bathroom, basically, and then it would pop out and just, like, choke the guy out and take his outfit. But now, if I pop out of that closet, he sees me in the mirror because it's a bathroom, and he's like, yo, what are you doing? And turns around.
Super
and,
cocaine.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing, is super cocaine. So, like, that stuff is really cool. Needing to figure out different plans around some of that stuff has been great. I think it's a...
Question.
Yeah, go ahead.
So one thing that I've, like, I didn't play 2016, but like my memory of previous Hitmans,
yes,
is that it is a comedy at times. It's very funny, yes, but also sometimes you get into a death spiral where it ends up with you being in basically a really crap shooter where like 47 is posted up somewhere, yeah, with a Kalashnikov and a lot of ammo and is just like mowing down guards as they come. And the game would never actually like stop you from doing that. And so
I think you could still, what I'll say is like, I've never had that much ammo. Mm-hmm. You will get overrun pretty quickly. I've had a few good shootouts in this most recent series, mostly in Hitman 1. And I think you're a little too spongy. So when the game when Hitman 2016 first shipped, you were a fucking like a piece of paper hanging on a wire. A couple bullets would end you. They shifted that about 6-7 months after that game launched and made you a little hardier so that if things really broke bad, you would live. And that's carried into Hitman 2, where like, yeah, you can take a few shots. But you can't really just outshoot them, and you're certainly not going to, if that's how you're going to play, you're probably not going to get much out of it. What I'll say is there's enough of an incentive to, in those situations, just load an autosave. Maybe you lose 6 minutes, but like just load the autosave. Your current outfit won't be compromised. Because that's the other thing is like whatever you're wearing, that style of outfit gets compromised when someone has seen you and reported you using that outfit, right? So like if you're in a security guard costume and you shoot at, you know, an EMT or you shoot at another security guard, or even just a certain security guard, there's a set of security guards called enforcers who are, or there's a set of characters in any level called enforcers who can see through certain disguises, right? So it's like inside of the wait staff, there's going to be someone who's effectively the like head waiter who can see that you are not one of his fucking waiters. And if he breaks your disguise by being near you long enough and kind of looking at you long enough, then that outfit will be compromised. And so you can never wear a waitstaff uniform again in that level. And so once it's like I'm in a firefight, whatever that costume is completely wasted at that point. You can get out of those situations if you're really clever. There have been times that I've done it and it's been fun. So I wouldn't say like automatically do it. But most of the time, if things break that bad, I'm loading a save. When I'm not loading a save is like when one person spots me and they're like, oh shit, you're not supposed to be in here. And I throw a brick and it hits him in the head. And then I'm like, I'll run up and crack his neck and throw him over the bridge or whatever. And then hope that someone below the bridge doesn't see a body falling.
Do you have any really elegant Rube Goldberg-esque kills that you would care to boast about?
So most of them so far, I'm like going through the kills that the game has set up. So I don't want to like, I don't think that that's necessarily.
You've not composed your murder symphony?
Not yet. I think the closest thing was the thing I did at E3, which is I played the Miami level, which is the first full level of the game.
That's the race, right?
It's a racetrack, and there's a race going on, and one of your targets is. So your two targets on that level are the head of this like arms company that is having an exposition attached to the race. So they've taken over like a convention center to show off all of their new like androids and race cars and everything else that they have, medical technologies, like a tech company, to various potential investors and the press. And so there's just a very good one that involves you dressing up like a general and a potential customer of this arms manufacturer, that goes really well. People should definitely do that one. But his daughter is one of the racers. She races his super fast cars or his company's super fast cars. And both of them are part of this international conspiracy because that's what Hitman is all about. And there's a lot of ways you can take her out. Some of them are about what happens after the race is over because the race is actually going as you're playing, and you'll hear the announcer go, "All right, 5 laps left," as you're going. During E3, I was like, I'm gonna go find a sniper rifle and take a shot and just see if I can crack the window. But I need a backup plan just in case. And so I took out this race marshal who kind of has access to all the area around the racetrack. And I just planted a remote mine on the track. And so there was just a good moment of me taking up a position, I want to say like on a nearby hotel roof or something, and sniping and catching her in the car. The car started to wheel out of control. But then I was like, I wonder if this will work. And I hit the remote mine just as she passed over it. And I got the, like, final animation for the remote mine going off and not the sniper rifle. But, you know, I feel like what I've done there is I've thrown the investigators into disarray. She was shot in the head and a bomb blew up the car. It's very strange. What was the real? Was there a third shooter? Who could say? So that was a fun one, but nothing specific yet.
Isn't it also, like, I feel like this is one of those games, and I didn't play the 2016 one like Rob, but I'm looking forward to actually playing this one, because so many of my friends that I trust, like, didn't play Hitman games before, mm-hmm. and, like, fell in love with this one. There is also probably the performance of playing Hitman is key to some of the weirder ones, and more, like, it seems like my favorite Hitman stories have come out of friends of mine who are streaming the game for big audiences, for small audiences. But that, like, when you're in just in the moment, you're more naturally going to play conservative and objective based and just try and get to the end. Whereas, especially maybe after you've beaten it and you're like, all right, I've done it. I have an understanding of the mechanics and the flow of things. But now, especially where it's like, what do people want to see? Do they want to just see me, like, do the easy thing, or, like, try and do something elaborate and weird and, like, see how the game
so I will say
it.
That's
and so the performance definitely part, I think, is key
super helps. I haven't streamed it yet. I'm excited to.
Or doing it with friends, totally, or, totally. You know, like, passing the controller totally. Or something.
The thing I will say, number two, though, is the game does the best job of encouraging that through some features. So, one, there are a set of challenges for every level, right? And so some of those are directly tied to specific pre-authored kills. There are things called mission stories in this game. In the last game, they were called opportunities. Here, they're called mission stories, and they're really highlighted because they want you to fucking see this stuff, right? And so, for instance, there was the... I'm trying to think there's one that I already talked about that I can happily spoil, basically. Let's say the race car one, right? There's one in which... In that mission, one of the ways that you could kill the race car driver is to sabotage the pyrotechnics at the winner's circle. And then you also have to ensure that she wins that race somehow without without it ending the race, right? You need her to get to the winner's circle. So you can't just go, like, sabotage the entire race. So there has to be a way to, like, sabotage an opponent's car or get them disqualified or something like that, right? And so, like, that stuff is just, like, already there. And it's, like, mission story. And there's, like, six of those per level. So that stuff's already, like, all really cool. But then on top of that, you're going to just see, like, oh... there's also a challenge to kill that same character not connected to any of these pre-authored mission stories. And those can just immediately encourage you to be like, but wait a second, how could I kill this race driver with an android arm? Like, okay, I guess I'll have to figure out how to get to a place where there's an android arm and her at the same place.
Teach sentience.
Right? I don't know. We'll have to see. There's one, the very first level is this kind of like, you land on a beach and you're in like a wetsuit and you go to you're investigating something at this house that this Illuminati like company has a bunch of people staying at, and it's abandoned, and you try to find some information, and then your target comes in. And so when your target comes in, you could just run up and shoot them, or you could poison their wine or whatever. And in that level, there's like a ton of different ways to get that kill. There's like the one that I did recently was, I'd been planning on doing one where I just, like, shot down through a skylight, which is a special challenge, or, like, shoot from the skylight when they're in their bedroom. But it all went wrong. Someone spotted me. My outfit got compromised. But I managed to, like, sneak out and get to the rooftop. And instead of going to her bedroom, she went to the panic room. And I checked the challenge list, and one of the challenges there was, like, use poison gas to poison the panic room through the air filtration system. And I was able to do that.
That's cool that it, like, is understanding when things go wrong, the game will move in a different direction.
It didn't direct me there, but I knew that I could do it because you can bring up the list of challenges at any point, basically.
But I just mean, like, the fact that, like, it's not, like, you went for this specific challenge, and then, like, because it didn't go right, it's like, ah, well, this whole thing was a bust. Like, there's nothing else to do. It's like, oh, no, actually, there's a different branch I can go down.
Tons of stuff to go down. Yeah, exactly. So that's already part of it. But then the stuff that really ends up doing the wacky, goofy, funny, the funniest stuff are the escalation missions and the contracts. Anybody can make a contract in this game, which is where you go in and you say, okay, you literally walk around the world and then you pick a character and then you kill them in a certain way. It's almost like Mario Maker, where you do a thing and then you're like, all right, I'm gonna upload that challenge to the world, and then someone else has to do it. And the thing is,
that's cool.
If once you start to learn how the clockwork moves, you can figure out how to advance certain like mini storylines in the game or put people in different states so they move into different places. And so you can end up doing things like bringing someone way out of where they're normally at into a different zone, and then the person who's doing the contract you've made has to do it in the disguise you're in and with the weapon you did it. Right, so it's almost like a game of like horse, right? Where you're like, all right, I'm gonna take this wild ass shot. Figure this out, motherfucker. and that stuff is really cool because you're like, how the fuck did this person kill the head of this cult with a battle axe? Like, where is the battle axe even at in this level? And how did they get it there without being shot the whole time? Like, you can't just walk around with a battle axe. So that stuff is really fun. And then right now there are no new. Escalation missions. But those were a big part of the first game's goofiness and stuff. So, like, I'm just going to click a random one that I have not seen previously. This is the Osterman Mosaic. This one doesn't have this. Wiki doesn't have the actual info on that one. God damn it. I was trying to click a thing. All right, so here's one. This is from the Snorrison Ascension. They all have really cool names, these escalation missions. These are the things where you go in, you do a mission, and then you go back and do it again with a different requirement, and those build, and those end up being the things that end up being really funny and goofy. Sometimes they add new targets. So this one is like, the first level requires Agent 47 to eliminate Silas Netsky, a KGB officer with a pistol while disguised as a Soviet soldier. He's found on the second floor. Okay, that's an easy hit. Get a pistol, get the Soviet outfit, go ahead and do it. Then the second level adds the objective of breaking into the safe in the office where Knight usually is and stealing the contents. Then the third level is it adds another target who is a soldier guarding a major character, and in that point you have to be disguised as an airplane mechanic. Then the fourth level says you have to hide all dead or unconscious bodies within 90 seconds or you fail the mission. And then the final level says you cannot pacify anyone, which means you cannot knock anyone out. All you can do is kill your targets. That's all you're allowed to do. If you knock anybody out, you will fail the mission. And so those extra restrictions are what force you to play outside of your normal playstyle. Normally you're like, I'm just going to knock this person out and then switch into their costume and blah, blah, blah. Like, I don't even know. So again, it also makes you have to know the level. So in this level, presumably, I bet you there's a guard's uniform in some room somewhere or a mechanic's uniform somewhere that you can go find in a locker room or something. And so you end up learning the ins and outs of all these levels because the escalations force you to do that. There's no escalations in this yet. I believe they are coming in the first major update. There's an elusive target coming soon. This is like the Sean Bean thing. So I'm really looking forward to that stuff. People should... I like this game a lot. Again, there is such a high degree of disclosure that if you decide to disregard everything I've just said, I totally get that. But this is such a me game. This is the thing that pushed Red Dead off the platter for me this past week. It was like, I have to get through Tetris Effect. I have to get through Hitman. Not because I feel a responsibility, but because like all I want to do is go in there and tinker around. The final fucking level in Hitman this year is so good. I want to talk to y'all about it so bad, but I don't want to spoil the conceit because it's so good. Someone radicalized that Hitman team. Let me tell you, there is some in a good way.
All right,
setting a high bar there, Austin.
You just wait until I tell you what this fucking final stage is. It ripped from the headlines, but in a good way.
Breaking news. Yeah. I'm going to force us to do something okay. Right now. Okay, I'm going to drop a link, and we're all going to watch this together. We're going to click 3, 2, 1. We're going to react in real time to the Detective Pikachu trailer that the internet is flipping the fuck out about right now.
Do you want
to
count us in here?
Let's load it up.
Do you want to count us in?
Hold on.
Okay, I got it ready. I'm so – this is a movie, right?
This is a movie with Ryan Reynolds voicing Pikachu.
Not Danny DeVito.
What if this just turns out to be 2 minutes of reverent silence? That's bad podcast.
It's, you know, I think we got to bring ourselves.
That will be our own commentary.
Austin's frozen. He's already overcome by Detective Pikachu. Austin's like.
Austin, are you still there?
No. We lose Austin. Austin was overcome. Like, Austin was, like, he started to watch this, and he was like, no, I need this in 4K.
Hey, can you hear me now?
Hey.
Okay, yeah. I'm now ready. I can't both take video and watch a YouTube video at the same time without my computer buckling anymore.
Okay.
All right.
That's what I figured. It seemed like as soon as you loaded the trailer.
Yep, but I'm good to go now.
Okay. All right.
Three, two, one.
Okay.
Look at that Charizard.
The Charmander, Patrick, please.
I'm sorry.
It's a baby.
I'm too excited.
This is so serious.
It's Ken Watanabe's here.
Let them fight.
They're making a Pokemon movie.
And this is a world where this all really happens.
This isn't like a world where Pikachu came to our world or something.
No.
He pulled a gun on Pikachu?
I think it's a stapler.
Okay. I don't like this.
What's his voice? What is happening with his voice here? I hate this.
This
I'm so excited for this movie.
This premise is amazing. So wait.
Why is he crying?
I'm getting serious first Ninja Turtles movie.
Yeah, uh-huh. That movie fucking rules.
That movie does rule. That was a good cliffhanger.
That movie made it okay to swear.
It's true. This is...
Oh.
Mr. Mime. Yeah, good.
Wait, is Pikachu about to electrocute a suspect?
An invisible wall, because it's a mime. Mr. Mime made an invisible wall. That's what just happened. That's a Charizard right there. The one who's going to eat Pikachu. Correct. I guess I'm going to see this.
That looks great. It's so weird.
Kato says, I'm losing my mind.
I've wanted Nintendo to do this with their franchises. Like, not even just outside of the realm of the games they make, but like, I wish they would take more risks with just like...
You just want all the characters that have sassy voices.
No, just like weird shit. Just like let people go do something with these like big properties. And like, I don't know. Maybe this ended up being bad.
We're
going to
get the Sonic movie too soon, right? You see the shots of that.
Trailer's got to be soon for that. I mean, fucking Jim Carrey is going to beat Dr. Robotnik. Come on.
That's incredible.
I am here for
Ben Schwartz is going to be Sonic. It's going to be great.
Which is such a good pick.
Yeah, it's all such good casting. Did you see the shots? The shots of from the... production or whatever.
Set, yes, where it's like actually in a Green Hill Zone, the city or something.
I'm very excited for this complete for all of this bullshit. I'm just gonna slowly watch the beginning of this trailer over and over again for details.
There's a lot of screen captures out. Like I checked over to Twitter and was just like, "What's going on?" But I share the sentiment that it's genuinely surprising that Nintendo is like letting something like this.
It's
happen.
Just not what I thought it would be. I thought this would be a movie about a. Like our world, and then a Pikachu shows up, and then there'd be lots of gags.
Or a kid
about,
falls
like,
into the Pokemon world.
Maybe, yeah, exactly, but not.
Or that
just...
like Nintendo's cinematic debut after like essentially being so like crossed by the original Mario Brothers film would be like this Illumination. You know, the folks that do the Minions movies and Secret Life of Pets, they're doing a Mario movie in a couple of years.
Right,
like,
right,
that makes sense.
Right.
Like, they've already said, like, Miyamoto's, like, working with us on the story. Like, they're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But, like, this, like...
Is it even in... It might even... Is this even in the, like... I want to know where this takes place. I'm, like, falling into traps of just... I need to know what the world is in this movie so badly.
I'm going to show this trailer to my daughter tonight. I am hoping she loses her mind. I need justification to go to this movie soon as possible.
Okay, he's leaving. I'm straight up looking at his airplane ticket here. Leaventown. Where is that at? Where is that at?
Right.
In the
now this is in the
post,
but also it seems like they're in Japan. Like
right. God, I don't. Okay, Rhyme City is a major city in the Pokemon. Oh, that's the setting of Detective Pikachu the game. Am I going to have to go fucking play this Detective Pikachu game now?
I don't think so.
Based on the game?
I think it's just ripping the premise. Like, the idea that...
Are you sure?
I don't... Maybe I'm wrong.
Hmm.
But I'm pretty sure it's just, like, ripping the premise of, like...
Oh my god, I just read the fucking opening line of the plot of the fucking Pikachu game, Detective please. Pikachu. Have you ever read this?
No. Maybe two I months, did, but it's been a while.
2 months prior to the start of the game, Harry Goodman and his partner Pikachu get into a car accident while investigating a case, leading to Harry's disappearance and Pikachu losing his memory and his ability to use moves. Tim Goodman, Harry's son, comes to Rhyme City in search of his missing father. I think they just made this game into the movie. I'm going to play this game now. I'm going to or at least watch someone else play this game now.
It's a 3DS game.
The fact that they went with like a neo-noir palette and shot composition for this is really weird to me.
Who is directing this movie?
It was, I don't know who's directing it. I know the script was written by, so everyone associates Guardians of the Galaxy with James Gunn, but the original script for that film was written by an in-house Marvel Studios writer whose name is escaping me, and she wrote the
Nicole
script for
Perlman
this.
Is her
Nicole
name.
Nicole Perlman.
Yeah. Interesting. She also wrote the first draft and is doing the post work on Captain Marvel. Yeah. And then it's being directed by Rob Letterman, who directed 2015's Goosebumps and 2010's Gulliver's Travels. And
so Monsters of Aliens is a totally competent, fun kids movie.
Yeah.
And Goosebumps also is a totally fun, totally competent kids movie. So,
cool.
It's not, it's. This where this movie goes great. Wrong is not going to be because, the directing is off.
Okay. I'm so here for it. It's cursed in so many ways, but so is life.
I'm you know what? 2018 is fucked in so many ways, but if that's this timeline also means that we get this, you know?
Well, here's the thing. I like this so much more than if they had just done a straight-up Pokemon movie.
Right.
They did that. It's animated. There's lots of great animated Pokemon content out there. But, in terms of a live-action movie, this premise, this being, this weird side door into the world of Pokemon is so much more interesting to me than if they had to, do the movie where, they explain what Pokemon, are, and then, this kid shows up in the world of Pokemon. And he's like, whoa, what are Pokemon? People fucking know who Pikachu is. He's Pikachu. So,
and it's cool.
I'm here for it.
It is cool just as someone that's seen these characters for so many years to see them rendered. It's not realistically, but it's definitely closer to that's. It's the opposite of the aesthetic that Nintendo has harnessed. In the years since Pokemon started, this is something completely different in a way that is just that part. The movie would be worth seeing just to see, a high end, a CGI team forced to render them in a weird aesthetic. The movie will be worth it just for that.
Yes, definitely.
I'm
God,
in.
I'm here for it.
I'm in.
I'm all the way in. I'm all the way in. All right. Do we have anything else to talk about today, or has Detective Pikachu taken us over the break?
A brief shout out to The Gardens Between, which is a game that's on Switch and PC and probably some other platforms. It's a puzzle game in which the short the pitch on it is that you largely can only move left to right. Now the characters in the game will jump and duck and play and interact with things, and what you're trying to do is get that stuff in order. So there are brief things you can interact with the A button that will change a part of the world, but it's a lot of things are happening in the world that change based on as you move, right to the right, the time goes in a certain direction. As you move left, it goes backwards, and there's just a lot of really fun puzzles. It's not particularly complex, but it's really delightful. As someone that doesn't likes easy lift on puzzle games that make him feel smart, but bounced off The Witness because it was just too much for me. I'm really enjoying my time with the Gardens Between, which I'm playing on Switch. It's totally great on there. And so I would, if you're looking for, that sounds like something up your alley. I would recommend checking it out.
Rob, can you read this Mike Drucker tweet you just dropped in the chat?
God, it's so much. Atop a satellite dish in South America during a thunderstorm. The criminal holds out his gun, looking. You can't hurt me, Pikachu! I'm ground type! Pikachu appears behind him and slits his throat. Looks like you're a ghost type to me.
So fucking good!
So again, this movie, it could be trash, but it will be worth it for the memes. It will be worth it for the culture around this movie.
I saw Pixels in theaters. This is going to be better than Pixels. I can already tell you that. So I'm here for it.
Do we want to argue about Waypoint 101?
Yes, we should argue about Waypoint. Well, we should talk about Waypoint 101. We should figure out what Waypoint 101 is going to be. Maybe probably won't do that right this moment, but we should. I do briefly, before off of Nintendo has figured out how memes work, which they certainly have this year. Boy, the year of fucking Nintendo memes by way of Bowsette.
The Smash Brothers trailer.
The Smash Brothers trailer is the big one. The one, so they released a Smash Brothers trailer last night. Did you see this?
Well, this is two. Both the cinematic trailer for the adventure mode.
Yes.
And then, yes, I've seen inklings of the TV commercial, but I haven't watched it yet.
So the TV commercial didn't have music in it. It only had sounds the characters made.
Weird.
Which means it's a minute long, which means it's great for layering songs on top of and retaining the sounds of, like, a Pokeball being opened or Bowser showing up and roaring. So, like, they basically released B-roll.
Green screen version of a...
Yes. Yeah, the meme, the audio meme equivalent. So now people are
screen.
Just tossing whatever songs they want on there. And they're all good. They all work. Like, there's a lot of good stuff out there. People should look those up. I just want to, like... There is something very savvy about it. And I'm not saying it's capital G good. I don't think, like... There are times when I have to put on my, like, hey, this is my philosophical, you know, political theory cap. And there are times when I have to, like, stand back a bit and be like, yeah, Nintendo's pretty fucking fun. Nintendo, you figured it out. I don't know if it was intentional or not to release the version without audio or without music in order to encourage people to add their own and share it.
They're not getting in front of it, right? Like, so it's like, even if some of the stuff they're backing into in a way that there's probably it's a mixture of them wanting it and then probably an unquantifiable amount of just like it's a happy accident, but it's also them not coming out and like ruining the fun. Like they're letting people have fun with it, which is a different type of Nintendo.
It is so weird to be not pro Nintendo. I've had a good year with Nintendo. Like the last 2 years have been years where I'm like, oh, yeah, Nintendo. I like my Switch. I really love Breath of the Wild. I love the memes. But like, I don't have a deep fondness for Nintendo. I think a lot of people like I was more of a Genesis kid than a Super Nintendo kid. I never really, really loved Mario outside of Mario 1 and 2 and 3. Those are, like, really my Mario games. And I liked Super Mario World, but by then I was already an edgelord, preteen edgelord who was like, this is too colorful for me. I'm going to be over here in Chemical Plant Zone. That's where we adults hang out. We mature kids hang out. But it's been cool to see them figure this out. Rob, you're right. Waypoint 101. Oh, no, briefly, one last thing, which is, talking about resourcing, my understanding is the team that made Hitman 2 is, like, fairly small in composition. It's not this huge, sprawling, Rockstar-level thing. And I was going to bring that up in relation to the Mumbai stuff, where, like, I hope that they get resources to do better on that stuff in the future. And same thing with Colombia, where, like, you cannot just have, like, a shaman show up and let you be the shaman and exploit people's beliefs and assume that that is, like, chill. Please do better on that front. Also, it is wild to me that we live in the world where Warner Brothers published The Quiet Man instead of Hitman 2 this year. One of those games is fantastic, and the other one is The Quiet Man, and it's so much. People should please check out video of The Quiet Man, because it's out there, it's available now. I've watched that whole game through.
Yeah, I don't think I need to...
No,
I played enough of it. I think I just need to go back. Yeah. I, one of the holidays, I'm going to watch Giant Bomb's playthrough of it and see the rest there.
The Giant Bomb East played through the whole thing. You should watch them do it. It's part of their extra live stream this year. It's a fucking weird thing, and it's so depressing to me that Square decided to publish The Quiet Man instead of publishing. Not instead of, like, I'm sure there wasn't a choice between them. It was like, which of these two projects? But what they did do was cut IO and continue to make The Quiet Man. And it's just so hard to see those two different realities in front of us, and that this was the one that they walked through. The Quiet Man, by the way, like, there are some fuck-ups in Hitman. The Quiet Man is, like, front to back about, like, a beautiful white blonde boy beating up Hispanic, quote-unquote thugs, Latinx thugs, and trying to avenge his mother, who is also the same actress plays his girlfriend in this game. It's a lot. It's choice, my guy. They go for it in some ways. It's bad. It's bad. Anyway, that's my last thing on that. Rob. Waypoint 101. What are we doing? You're muted again.
I keep doing that because I just get I start watching too much through through my headphones.
Yeah, I got you.
I'm not. I don't know. I'm not sure. I had the idea of change of pace. What if we play like a little cooperative game? Waypoint, you know, Collective 101.
I would love to do. I really like that idea. I do like the idea of a co-op game only because it would mean we would play some of it together, and that would be fun. We'd do that as a stream, maybe. I guess, like, let's go over the 101s we've done. Does that make sense? That way we just get our heads around it. We've done Red Dead. We did Shadowrun Dragonfall. We did Mad Max. We did Fortnite. We did Metro 2033. We did Zombie U. We did some movies. We did Blade Runner 2049 and Black Panther. I don't know if I really count those. Yeah. We did Wolfenstein, New Order, and New Colossus. New Colossus we only sort of did. Like we did a spoiler. We kind of did, right?
Yeah, we did.
Is that right? Yeah, okay. And then we did Binary Domain.
Yeah.
So pretty healthy. Well, a lot of games. A pretty healthy spread of international developers, Western, Eastern European, Japanese, but we've been pretty heavy on like pretty big, like B and A tier games in terms of size. I guess Shadowrun is not that, but by and large, lots of action games, lots of shooters for sure. Those are things I'm trying to be really conscious of for this next one, because I'd like to get us out of our like safety zone a little bit, out of our liberal bubble, you know. Mm-hmm. Really trying to open up the marketplace of ideas for us, so to see what sticks. I don't have anything. Nothing jumps out to my like. There's a huge list of games I love, and we have a great thread on the forum that if you're listening, please go contribute to it. That is just like here are games that we should play. Here are some good suggestions. And those include a range of things, including a lot of stuff that I know I love already. Like, someone most recently suggested Far Cry 2 because it's the 10-year anniversary of Far Cry 2. And, like, I would love to talk about Far Cry 2 with y'all. But, like, we've done so many shooters that I'm trying not to fall into that trap again. Patrick, do you have any thoughts on this?
No, I think when we talked about this pre-show, you know, I fell in the same boat. I was like, I don't know. I'd like to be able to throw some suggestions at us that, like, would... I'd like to play something that challenged us in a way that, like... I think Red Dead was a fun one, like, especially for you and me, because we loved that game, and then to watch the veil drop was enjoyable. So I don't know, but I'm open to suggestions, and I guess I'd like to throw it out to folks who they think would be interesting. But, yeah, something that maybe both fulfills the role of shying away from... I mean, not necessarily away from like AAA. Like maybe there'll be something we go, oh shit, yeah, that would totally be a really good one.
Like I'll be honest, Rob, you suggested Syndicate to me, the cyberpunk EA's cyberpunk shooter. I forget who's the dev on that. It wasn't
Team
it was,
Cyber Heists. Oh, that was Starbreeze.
Yeah, thank you. partially for its co-op mode, which is a fantastic mode that I try to play at least once a year. But I've played that game so many times, and it feels like it's such like a... It seems to be, in my mind, so in the wheelhouse of Wolfenstein, Metro, even a little bit of Zombie U, in that like it's like, oh, it's a stylish, like, off-the-beaten-path first-person shooter. So I'm resisting it a little bit, but, you know, if there's overwhelming support for it, it's not something I'd say no to. So, yeah, go in that thread. That's at discourse.zone. You'll see there's a thread called Games for Waypoint 101. Also, just reply at us on Twitter and let us know what you think.
Also, we've completely, I think, probably missed on platformers, racing games, adventure games, point and click, and otherwise.
Point and click adventure games, and otherwise, yeah, totally. Yeah. Puzzle games,
strategy games.
Strategy games is huge for sure. And very narrative heavy, which I like because it's stuff I like, but I'm happy to do something else, you know? Strategy games is definitely not represented here. There's like RPGs in the more traditional sense, whether Western or Japanese. I guess we have Shadowrun. That was an RPG. But yeah, so give us a note there. Give us a note on Twitter. And I guess I'll spin this into our outro. You can find me on Twitter at Austin_Walker. Where can people find you, Rob?
At Rob Zachney.
How about you, Patrick?
At Patrick Klumpig.
You follow Kato at @A_Kato_appears. Thank you to Kato for doing production on this one on a quick turnaround. You can do you can follow everything we do at twitter.com/waypoint, facebook.com/waypointvice. You can read all of our stories at waypointadvice.com. You're going to have to read them because you can hear I'm losing my voice suddenly. It's very good. I don't know what happened here. I think that Detective Pikachu trailer took it out of me. I feel like I've been infected by some sort of voice stealing. Which is the Pokemon that steals Austin's voice? Can you find that out for me? Please find that out for me. And let me know by writing in to gaming@vice.com. That's going to do it for us. Shout out to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Panel Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Danielle's not here to take us out, so I'm going to need one of you two to do that. No one has anything. No one has a. No one has.
Rob's usually the one that has the thing at the end.
It's going to you now, Patrick. It's going to be you. What do you got to say?
All right, be good and be good at it.
Peace.
It's okay. We can cover this up. I'll drop a Pokeball next to this guy, and then it'll be justified force.
Jesus Christ! You have to have a Pokeball. You have to have something in the Pokeball to
keeps one in his hat just for this. For this eventuality.
I keep a fucking Rapidash in here.
Why do you think I fucking wear this?
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.